Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Don't you always want to hear it right from the horse's mouth? I certainly do. I want the best and the brightest minds in the industry to tell me about it. Yeah, Tell Me About It is my latest podcast. Since I come across so many interesting people in the industry, some of my favorite students, they ask me if I can speak to some really intelligent and well-known people on hot and trending topics. You know, like content, influencers, health, branding, entrepreneurship, and more. Who am I to quiz the best and brightest, you ask? Well, I am Siddharth Deshmukh, also known as the Traveling Professor. Maybe you've heard me before somewhere. Yeah, I teach across various institutes. Join me and new experts every week over two parts where we dissect these topics and try to make sense of them. Hopefully, learn something about it when they tell me about it. This podcast is an HT Smartcast original and is available on htsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
So hello one, hello all. Welcome to episode number whatever it is on this webinar series. Tell Me About It. I've got Rajan Srinivasan and Rajat Turi with me. Thank you, gents, for making it on Saturday. I knew you had to go parties so many places in this lockdown. But thank you. Absolutely. So I'm going to make a very quick sort of introduction to for both of you. I'm going to keep it informal. And I'm going to kind of set the tone and then probably introduce the topic. So here we go. Right? Rajat is a fellow Mican, and I can proudly say that I'm a senior. So that is always a brownie point for me. The rest of it, I think he wins. So he's done the rest of it because he's built this amazing brand called Happily Unmarried and Ustra as well. And I think that those have become cult brands in India, and especially for the Mican community. Rajat, you have built something which all of us are so proud of. And, you know, it just makes a huge, huge impact whenever I hear your name in hushed and awed tones for all Micans within Mica. So I just wanted to say that to you. I think you had a short stint with Mudra before you just jumped the ship and went over to the dark side.
Yeah. So, thank you, Sid. That's a very nice introduction. Thank you so much. I'm really honored. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, you have to say all the nice things because I have to moderate this, so this has to happen.
You can mute me anytime you want to.
No. So we have Rajan, and Rajan Srinivasan is a really interesting character. I met him as a management trainee in Sony Entertainment, and both of us used to get very bored in the first couple of weeks at the beginning of at the beginning of my career. He'd worked with Indian Express for a couple of years, so we used to go out on smoke breaks. And at one time, I think Rajan was, nursing a hangover and was, smoking a lot. And so was I because of him. And we were outside and he was looking at Sony Entertainment's building. And he was saying, you know, Sid, an organization is like an illusion. So I was like, this man is something else. And Rajan, I'm sure, doesn't remember that because he was probably still in last night's party.
I don't remember it.
I'm sure you don't. And I was like, damn it, I'm just beginning my career and this guy's saying organizations are illusions. But It was a very strong and prophetic statement, and I've come to realize the strength and truth of that statement, actually, honestly, Rajan, whenever I've seen organizations kind of disappear or even grow big and stuff like that. So Rajan's had a wonderful innings, and after being a CEO, he then moved ship and started Scatter, which is, as he proudly says, is India's number one content marketing agency. And he, besides doing content marketing, he also does a lot of MarTech, which I came to learn about quite recently. He's running this wonderful agency or company or software company or whatever you want to call it for the past 6 to 7 years. So welcome, Rajan. And I hope we have a good time along with Rajat here.
Yeah, thank you, Sid. Thank you so much. Lovely intro. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. So now what I want to do is just talk about this topic, because I've had enough of these shitty webinars wherein, you know, people go all over the place and, you know, they're stuck and stuff like that. So what I want to do is just introduce this topic. I actually believe that entrepreneurs, okay, like yourself and Rajat, okay, have a different way of building brands. And perhaps they have not recognized it themselves, or perhaps they have. But the rest of the corporate world is on a weird ride, okay? And they don't really understand how to build brands. And Rajan, you are in a different state because you are also building brands for other people. And Rajat, on the other hand, has created a cult brand, which, you know, we speak about very highly. So I was wanting to explore with the two of you this theme, wherein I believe that we can learn a lot from entrepreneurs who build successful brands or who help other people build successful brands, because I believe that the whole brand building world is full of bullshit. Okay, so I just wanted to figure out from the two of you on this topic. So this is the topic, and we'll be mainly kind of swimming around in this topic, right? So I just want you to get your thinking hats on. Now, having said this, I'm going to ask my first question. I'm going to shut up now after I ask my first question. And most of the talking will be done by the two of you. So the first question that I have is, so if you look at Pareto's principle, right? So 80-20, 80% of the results, 20% of the effort, or 20% of the thing. I'd like to hear from the two of you. What is that 20% that both of you think you have done, in Rajan's case for other brands as well, but specifically for his brand Scatter, and for you, the two brands that you've built, what has done which has resulted in 80% of the brand building success or magic that you have reached to? So I'd let any one of you go first. Maybe Rajat can start, and then we can let Rajat have a say.
From my experience, I think one of the things that we got right more with Ustra than with Happily Unmarried was also the timing, you know. So one important thing which I'm discovering, you know, after spending a lot of time with Happily Unmarried, is there needs to be a right opportunity in the market for you to launch. And somehow we cracked that with Ustra, you know. So while a lot of people think that Ustra, because Ustra became, within 6 to 8 months, Ustra had become quite huge. And Happily Unmarried had taken almost 10 years to reach that point. So while a lot of people think that Ustra is an 8-month story, we think it's a 10-year and 8-month story. So I think maybe that's a big difference, that entrepreneurs can identify or they see these big gaps in the market.
Yeah.
Where they see that there's a sweet spot.
Yeah.
And they're able to capitalize on that. And because there's a market already, or the customers waiting for that, they lap it up, and they sort of, it becomes sort of, it sort of gets viral in the sense that people start talking about it more than they would if it was just another product in the category already has too much of too many things happening. So I would say that timing is a big influence. And when I say timing, I mean you have to identify the correct market and the correct customer you're targeting.
So what you're saying is the 80% of the impact that especially Ustra has had is because of the fact that the 20% that you got right in the brand building effort was time your efforts right. Is that right?
When I say time the efforts right, I mean that we were able to find a sizable market for a product that did not exist. And we were able to communicate it effectively that we've made those products that you guys wanted for so long and nobody else was doing it in India. So that's what I said. You know.
But weren't you doing that with Happily Unmarried as well? So I'm trying to understand the difference.
The challenge with Happily Unmarried was that Happily Unmarried was doing really well, but it just wasn't scaling. It became cult. People were talking about it. And this was a problem which we had to, you know, we faced with our VCs and investors a lot, is how do you think it's going to get bigger? What is that you want to do to make it go bigger? So while Happily Ever After was a beautiful cult brand, it had all the advantages of a cult brand as well as disadvantages. Disadvantages being that, you know, when the brand becomes a little bigger, then a lot of the core audience starts, you know, moving away from the brand. And with Happily Ever After, our challenge really was, what products should we introduce that will give us that spike to become a big brand? You know, yeah. So for instance, even to look at a number which is 100 crores seemed really a stretch in Happily Unmarried. While the kind of traction and the media coverage we were getting was disproportionate. And one of the feelings that what we kept thinking was, maybe it's a great brand, but the market is not ready for these kind of products. You don't have enough single households, you don't have enough disposable income, or you don't have enough people who are ready to indulge for a brief period of their life with these products and pay a lot of money for them. Okay. We are expensive. So that really was the challenge for us. And so Happily Married led to the fact that we have a lot of male customers. And we said, okay, we have a lot of male customers. What else can we bring for them? That led us to looking at, you know, beards as a category which was emerging. And then we started doing, okay, maybe we should get into grooming because that seemed like a bigger market. More traction, more customers. And then the Ustha story started. And we started working on towards saying that, what if we build a men's grooming brand? Taking over from Happily Married.
Okay, so I'm going to come back with you to you with a question for a minute. I'm just formulating that thought in my head, but I'm going to come back. Let me get Rajan to answer this one as well.
Sure, thanks, Sid. I think I'm not too sure whether I can answer your question with the 80-20 mix really, but let me try and retrofit what I want to say into this, right? So. You know, when I was last at Network 18, and I did manage, you know, I was one of the earliest guys to get onto the digital platform. I started in 1999 when, you know, the pre-internet bubble time. I kept finding that, you know, every time digital made some, made a little ground, right? Something new came, more complex came, and it killed whatever else was there, right? And it appeared like that. It appeared like that. Yeah. It didn't really. It was actually building layers, and nobody could see that. But, you know, today I can see that and say, that's what happened. So it began with this digital advertising, which was pretty terrible. It was it was offline advertising taking online shape, right? And not the best way to kind of go ahead. It was lazy. Till you had Google that actually came in and said that they didn't want to have this horrible thing that, you know, digital salespeople call innovations. Basically, disruptions are called innovations, right? And you then kind of moved to search, and just as kind of search started, you know, getting a toehold, then you got into digital. Digital became programmatic, and then there was social, and then there was content. So before one thing took off, the other thing
came into being.
This was kind of, you know, yeah, there were green shoots, right, in some way or the other. I saw that opportunity because I thought I missed a few buses in the, in trying to be an entrepreneur at some point. I was a little paranoid about being an entrepreneur, but then I guess, things happen. So I would think that 80% of what brands put out was shit, right? I'll give you a simple example. I'll give you what I think is a tribute to marketers and ad agencies, right? Is the word spam? Is the trash folder in an inbox, in an email, right? I mean, to have communication called spam and to have communication called trash, right? And that automatically landing up in those folders just kind of told me that, look, how brands missed the opportunity, how advertising agencies missed the opportunity, right? To create meaningful communication when I, as a person, put my hand up and said, I want information from you. You instead kept sending me advertising and kept telling me you were on sale when we could have had meaningful, real conversation, right? I also happened to start Scatter when people were still putting out full page ad saying that they got 1 million likes on Facebook, out of which they got 999,000 likes, right? I mean, I got in at that kind of time. And I kept thinking, why are brands doing this? Why are they sharing great information? Why aren't they upping this this opportunity that they have? Where I'm keen to kind of, you know, I follow Emirates because I like travel. And, you know, Emirates can't keep telling me that their, you know, their flat bed isn't going to get flatter, right? They need to have more conversation with me, right? And that's where we, that's where I kind of saw the gap. Importantly, unlike Rajat, right? We are a B2B offering and not a B2C offering, right? And therefore, there were two things that we did. One is we said we need to kind of build a brand, need to help brands migrate, right, from legacy communications to, I think, more modern communication. We need to kind of challenge a lot of things, right? I hate the agency that comes and says, these are three routes, choose one route. Okay. I'm like, bullshit, there are 500 more routes because you've got micro communities on the internet, right? And therefore, Sephora can't just be about a heart attack. Sephora is about running for the person who does the marathon. It's about food for the mother who's, you know, packing her kid's lunchbox and things of that. So it means different things to different people. And I think that's what we kind of saw. Since I've worn a marketing hat in the past, I was also very excited saying that, you know, I don't want to just get another agency which doesn't practice what it kind of preaches. That we wanted to build our own little brand. The good thing about it is, you know, my target audience was 700 people or 800 people, 800 companies out of which maybe there are four people in each company. So I could really micro target. I could have conversations like that. So
what I'm hearing from you is micro targeting and understanding that there are communities and actually doing those really well, unlike other people in your space. Is that
absolutely? So even if I had to, even if I had to push communication for Scatter, I think the communication that I would push out to the content team and marketing teams would be different. The communication that put out to a CMO would be different. The communication that I'm now planning to put out to CEOs is vastly different. It's about how can I help? How do I help a company? How should a company train its customers to access them digitally? Because I think that's what we need right now. Right, and I think that's a CEO conversation. Whereas the content conversation is how do I build at scale? How do I overcome writer's block and those kind of things? And I think that's what we're really doing.
Okay, wonderful.
So,
thank you.
80-20 answer, but
I'm going to come back. I'm going to get you on that. So just hold on. Maybe I haven't finished yet. But let me ask Rajat this one. Rajat, so what are the lessons that you took from Happily Unmarried and applied to Ustra? You think, or do you think, besides timing, obviously, because timing, yes, you got it right, from a branding perspective?
So one of the things that we did was that Ustra had a slightly sharper focus. We clearly knew who the audience was. You know, it targeted men of a certain age group. And we could, because of maybe the Happily Unmarried legacy, we understood the kind of language they understood. So for us, the big difference for us was while we were launching a men's grooming brand, we were not talking to him about benefits, but how, but more the swag bit, you know, how it'll help you look cooler. For instance, women, we discovered that women tend to look for, you know, the ingredient story. They wanted more benefits, but the guy just said, "Here, if you put this, you look the best." So, so what we understood was that, you know, for men, you can't give them gyan. This came out of our entire time we spent Happily Unmarried saying, what is the thing that became more popular, what kind of slogans picked up, what products were selling more. And the more we discovered that when you're targeting men, one is that you have to be not give too much gyan, keep things short because their attention spans are shorter. And they're looking for solutions. So I really think that we did. For instance, when we started branding the product, right up front, we mentioned what it is. So it clearly said, like, if you look at packaging, it clearly says body wash. It clearly says soap. It says face wash. We didn't hide that it's a face wash somewhere underneath. So the idea was to really be as unlike a grooming brand has been ever. Because we want, you know, to come out with a, you know, totally different approach to the way, till what people had done till now when it came to both grooming brand building and grooming segment or advertising for grooming products, and what had happened for men as a category. That till then, there were, apart from Gillette, there were no clear male grooming brands till then.
Yeah. Correct.
So that's, from there were a lot more learnings, I think, from the business perspective, which we implemented in Ustra. For instance, I'll give you quickly, Happily Man was a very, very high SKU, very, very high inventory business.
Mm-hmm.
So we made sure that when we, the next business we launch will not have too many SKUs. It won't have such a pile of inventory. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot more learnings in the business part of it. But when it came to branding, being active on social media, and that all was all learning that we picked up from. And we just continued from what we were doing at Happily Married and changed the tone and manner and started doing it for Ustra. So it's very interesting that a lot of people thought that, you know, we've entirely changed the teams. But apart from hiring formulators and maybe hiring some more people in the logistics and buying, the entire team that was doing Happily Unmarried and creating those funky products, the same guy started making soaps, oil, beard growth oils, and the same team was doing it.
Right.
So it was very interesting because everybody thought that, you know, we would have hired a lot of people, hired a totally new sort of team, but the entire same content team, the same digital marketing team, the same content in Logi was involved in doing the communication which was launched when we launched Ustra.
No, so that has a good side and a bad side. So obviously you're coming with a lot of baggage,
but you're
also kind of taking back all the learning. So I think that's probably something that happened in your case, right?
Sorry, I missed the part.
So the first bit is that you come with baggage. Okay, yeah, but the second bit is you also come with learnings. So I think you utilize those learnings to...
Yes, connect. Yes.
I think that's probably what happened. I think that's... Thanks. That was very insightful. Okay, back to Rajan. I have a question for Rajan. So you said Saffola heart attack and all of that, and that's the typical kind of simple storytelling that was happening, right? I'm just trying to understand from you, when you're looking at micro communities, and I believe that I'm kind of discovering this 80-20 thing for you. You said you looked at micro communities and you looked at a different way of content development and content marketing, and I believe that this connect to that would have to be with stories that you're telling, which are different, maybe more genuine, more relevant, more connecting. So can you talk a little bit about storytelling and how you look at storytelling in today's age, without talking about, you know, scatters model or something like that? I don't want to get there. I'm just saying your approach towards storytelling, you know.
So I think I have an interesting conversation with a lot of marketers that I meet, as well as content creators, right? I think the number of stories that can be told are finite. They're so finite that you can count them on your fingers.
True.
Right? Let's look at superheroes.
Right.
What is the story of a regular superhero movie that you see?
Yeah.
It's about the superhero being a very simple person. The superhero having this little girlfriend plot on the side.
Yeah.
Right? Shows the human side of the superhero. Yeah. It shows like this fantastic villain, like a super villain, right? More than the superhero.
Yeah.
And the villain is wrecking havoc wherever he or she or it is, right?
So that's a typical arc, you can see.
Right, yeah. And 20 minutes before the movie is kind of getting over, the entire Earth or the universe or whatever, the solar system, whatever you want to call it, wherever your boundary stops, right, is just going to perish, right?
Yeah.
And the superhero comes then, there, and things happen. There's also two ends that are there. There are only two potential endings. Ending one is that the villain dies.
Yeah.
Ending two is the villain runs away, and therefore they set you up for a sequel.
Correct.
They're anyway setting you up for a sequel, because when the villain dies, there's an even more fantastic villain who's going to get there, and, you know.
Correct.
And there's a franchise, and what really happens is the superhero story remains the same.
Yes.
Yeah. And I can give you such stories. There are love stories where, you know, they fight against the family and they make it and whatever. But the superhero is interesting because it's the same story. People flock to it. They make the franchise makes more money. The studio makes more money.
Sure.
Everyone makes more money. But the superhero has got a different uniform.
Yeah.
So the way Batman does something is very, very different from the way another superhero does.
I think Batman, by the way, is a very negative word now. Batman is going to have a lot of problems after the coronavirus.
I did that for context. Okay. I kind of newsjacked this one. Again, I'm retrofitting it. Sorry for that.
Yeah.
But, right? But if you get what I'm saying, then I think stories are finite.
Yeah.
And I think if I have to move the superhero bit, because everyone's solving a certain problem.
Right.
Everyone's trying to make the person's life better, look better, feel better, get richer, do those kind of things. Again, that's again finite. You can just count it. I mean, if you really think about it, that's it. There are just so many things that you do.
Yeah.
Banks want to make you richer. They want to manage your money better. And there's no difference, right?
Yes.
But the way I would say it is the uniform.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what we really, really do. And that's what our take on. So we don't look for different stories. Look at Cosmopolitan. For 30 years, they've been doing the same shit. How to kiss your boyfriend, how to kiss your boyfriend with pink lipstick. You know, what are the best ways to kiss? Should I kiss in the morning? Should I kiss in the night? You look at all news and you'll find that there's a repetitiveness to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain pattern to this entire thing.
Yeah.
And we've kind of figured it out. We know that Virat Kohli is going to hit 100 and we know he's going to get out on a duck. We know he's going to go out of form. We know he's going to probably win a World Cup. And again, it's finite. And I can tell you the stories around all of this now.
Yeah.
I don't have to sit and brainstorm for those stories.
Correct.
And that's really our take on storytelling. That's the way we kind of see it. So we make it easy. We don't think it's an art. We think it's a science.
Yeah.
Art is the uniform.
Art is the uniform.
But the story is
quite
the
science.
Interesting, yeah.
Very interesting, yeah. Very, very interesting. See, now, this is why I'm doing this webinar. Because I'm trying to get these kind of insights from you guys, which you can only have in a long form conversation. To be honest, you can't really get. So here's a long form question to Rajat now. Rajat, I personally think that if I look at the way in which you build a brand, right? You look at brand image building and you look at brand experience. In Ustra's case, and happily unmarried, of course, I believe the packaging. Has played a massive part in developing the brand experience part of it, maybe the story. You want to talk a little bit about it? Talk through.
When Happily Unmarried started, this was the pre Facebook era, so there was no way to reach out to customers.
Right.
We didn't have money to advertise. So we said if we make the packaging interesting, there is a chance that people will try to read it. Uh-huh. And they will retain the box and they'll know where to find us.
Right.
And that's why we put a lot of effort in packaging. Sometimes more than the product, there was effort in the packaging. Uh-huh. We didn't change the layout. It was a simple corrugated box, but the kind of stuff that we wrote on it, it became quite popular and it sort of had its own following. It had its own fan base rather. So that's how it happened. And that helped us because when we launched when Facebook came in 2007, 2008, we opened but till then we did not know how big or how popular the brand was because there was no way to find out. So what we did was we put up a Facebook community, and I think within 3 days there were 80,000 people, and we were shocked because at that time 80,000 was a very big number.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized that all that work which we did was making every packaging interesting, making sure that you know there are stories that they can talk to each other about. And it really was in a sense that, you know, which is what finally when you look at social media, it's people wanting to share something that they find interesting.
Correct.
That really is what social media aims at, you know. And we were trying to do that in the pre-Facebook era. So the packaging was our social network. in Ustra, the idea...
Yeah.
In Ustra, our entire idea was to, you know, till then, most of the packaging was done in a very, you know, in India, I'm talking about, most of the packaging was very traditional. There was a format because we have limited suppliers and most of the companies use the same suppliers for everything.
Yeah.
We wanted to change everything from the way the bottle looked.
Mm-hmm.
So we started doing, when we launched, we started doing slightly amber colored bottles.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of looked medicinal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the guy who's picked it up would know that while I'm buying a grooming product, it's not that I'm macho enough to buy something which looks like it's coming out of a medicine bottle and not a fancy white white jar with a pink handle on top.
So we
made the packaging. So initially, all even now, a lot of our packaging is just medicine bottles. And that really helped because, you know, it brought in some that people thought it's an old world kind of packaging. It's a really retro packaging. And honestly, when we started, we thought it was going to be a purely, purely metro phenomena. Because that was our happily unmarried exposure. But so we thought, we'll hit the top English speaking town. So which is why at least the initial part, everything was very, very English, very suave, very, very. So like we had a line which said not tested on animals, only on rascals. We still use it. and the line is simply to show that, it's okay. It's animal. We are not testing it on animals. But it's a really cool way to say it. After we launched, from a website, we service about 1,200 towns, including smaller towns where, so the language is becoming a barrier. So we can't be overly smart in our communication, and we can't do very clever lines anymore. We don't do it. And because, you want more people to understand what you're saying. Like I said, when we did the packaging and the labeling and we put the face wash or the beard wash right up front, because we didn't want people to get lost in trying to find out what the actual product is. The other thing we did was we started packaging it in tins, like the kind of tins Indigo used to sell the cookies in. We just started, it goes with the entire macho image of, while I'm buying a grooming product, it's coming in a tin box and it opens and it's got a brown bottle inside. And all those things really, really helped us to establish Ustra as not a B plan, like a plan B for all businesses. Like for instance, most of the FMCG guys in India had a full on women's range, and they would do have the same thing and they'd call it for men. So most guys knew that they were being taken for a ride and they were not getting the best products. Whereas we went out there and said, "Yeah, hum tere liye bana rahe. This is being made just for you. We don't want to work. We don't want to make products for women. We only want to make products for men because we understand men."
Yeah.
So what that did was, even now, it really resonated with the customers. So even now, I haven't seen it in too many brands. We have guys sending us products, holding our products in the hand. So you'll have a guy who's holding a... We just launched a sanitizer. So people send us photographs on Instagram with holding a sanitizer saying that please feature me on your Instagram page. So it's work that they identify with the brand and they want to sort of relate to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And with Happily Unmarried, the problem that later on we got to know was most guys said, look, we love the brand. We love what you do. We just didn't know what to buy from you. And that came with the show.
Everything
was very cool. You were consuming the Facebook, the social media posts.
I was sold on your image, but I didn't know what the fuck to buy.
So okay. Yeah. So a lot of people bought short glasses, but largely all of us said, we like what you guys do. We consume a lot of the social media. We post because some of the stuff we did on social that time got terribly viral. It really was popular. This is for me. I am buying it. It's targeted at me. It's talking to me. It's macho. It's got everything that a man wants.
Yeah.
So it is really, really heartening to see the numbers. It is heartening to see that within 2 months we are selling in over 600 towns. Now it's become 1,200 towns and cities and smaller areas where people can't read full sentences in English, which is how India is. But what we like is that we managed to reach that part. And the beauty is that the buying pattern or the consumer behavior is absolutely same. The same products are sold.
I just want to stop you there and ask you a question on this, right? So you're saying the buying pattern is absolutely the same, which means that there are a lot of similarities between metros, mini metros, and even smaller towns.
I would say men are largely same. That's a lot. Understanding, because and I'm not just saying that what is selling in rural Punjab is also selling in Kerala, in in Kolhapur, in Solapur. So yeah. It's similar across. And yeah. The same trend is, so bearing a few odd products, I would say that our top 10 sellers are almost similar in say, metros and non-metros or rest of India.
Wow, that was a good one, right? More of where that came from soon. Want to reach out to me? I'm Siddharth Deshmukh and I'm the traveling professor on Instagram. You'll find the funny side of me there. And on LinkedIn, I'm a little bit more serious, but I'm still the traveling professor. To give us feedback, you can reach out to us on HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, the usual suspects. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno naye nazariye se. And join me in the journey. Onward ho!
This was an HT Smartcast original.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.